Hey, folks, Mark Scroggins with Cindy Hyde and Miralee McEwen back to talk a little bit more about sex and love addiction. And one of the things that we're going to do, there's so many areas where the law and mental health issues intersect that we're going to create a new podcast that's talking about the intersection of those two. Yes, I'm excited about that.
Too. Yeah,
so let's talk about a few different things with sex and love addiction here. One of the things I wanted to know, what are three red flags? If you have are thinking that, that's odd, you know, what are three red flags that you would be concerned about if you think somebody might have a sex or love addiction?
Okay. So I'll use the example of if you're in a committed relationship.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
So if you're in a committed relationship and your partner is on their phone a lot, and everybody's on their phone a lot nowadays,
right.
But if it seems excessive,
or
if they're always on a computer and you can't see the monitor of the computer, but they tend to spend a great deal of time on a device of some sort, that would be something to investigate.
Okay.
The other is if they are working late a lot into the late hours of the night, that could also be a sign. And then also, too, you know, a lot of people travel for their jobs, so
right.
It's a little harder to detect. But a lot of times people on the road have easy access, too. And so, you know, you just want to pay attention because a lot of times, too, and when somebody is in their addict behavior, and we in the sex addiction world, we call it the addict, right?
Right.
When they are in addict behavior, they may not be treating you very well because they're so obsessed with trying to, you know, get back to their addiction.
Right.
Or, you know, if they come home from a trip and they're not treating you well, you know, you should be a little suspect of that, especially if it's a common occurrence. So those are some things to watch out for, too. Also, you know, if the credit card bills are, you know, out of sight, because a lot of the sites that can be visited can show up as something different on a credit card statement.
Right.
So if there's a lot of charges to the same kind of thing, you might want to pay attention to that as well. If the same, you know, if you get your phone bill and the number is called over and over and over, it might be something suspect. So you just
right.
want to pay attention to things that are out of character or that don't seem to add up, and to trust that. That it maybe it doesn't.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What other behaviors mm-hmm. do you see that would give you pause?
Mm-hmm. You know, anytime that a person isn't being treated well, that alone should be a flag.
Sure.
Of what's going on. You know, and is that truly who they are, or is it because something else is going on? So I think that one for sure. And then two, you know, just looking at, you know, male or female, depending which one, you know, you're with, you know, if they're constantly looking at members of the opposite sex, or they're making comments, or they're critiquing you and your body,
right.
That may be something that could be suspect as well, that
okay.
you might want to pay attention to. And because sometimes, and it doesn't, you know, there are a lot of people that look at the opposite sex that do not have a sex addiction. So don't go home and tell your spouse right now, like, oh my gosh, I think you have a sex addiction. Cause you
remember that
girl you looked at last, you know,
right.
you don't want to do that. Right.
Right.
But at the same time, if it's common and it's all the time,
right.
that may be something to look into, but you know, and to trust your gut, you
right.
know, because, you know, I believe that we instinctively know things. But be real careful before you go home and accuse someone of that. You know, you definitely want to make sure that what you're seeing is real.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I think that is, that kind of ties into some of the stuff I was talking about earlier, where people come into my office and they're like, well, you know, I looked on Google, and so I know that.
It's hard, though,
right.
Mark, when
right.
you're going through it, as mm-hmm. I have. Everything that you're going through, I didn't even think that mine was a sex addict. I just thought, oh
right.
my God, I can't believe that this is happening, and he doesn't deserve my child.
Right.
That's what I
right.
thought. Yeah.
Well, and yeah. that's...
Which is wrong.
Mm-hmm. They can, you know, anybody in addiction, you know, you've heard about, you know, mean drunk, nice drunk, right? You know, and some people are very functional in their addiction.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's something, too, that, you know, they can be very functional but still be acting out, right?
Right.
Yes.
So...
Well, and I think it's important to... You know, all of these sources, the stuff that you see on the internet, first, you need to make sure that you're on a reputable site and a reputable source, you know, to get the information. So, but just because it says, you know, list these certain things, you need to remember that you are looking through your particular lenses that can be off a little bit.
Exactly.
You know, so it's important to remember that. And just because... What you are perceiving as the truth does not necessarily mean it is
Absolutely.
The truth.
Yeah.
So, how is a what is a good phone number and a good email address for people to get in touch with you if they have questions about what is going on?
Yeah, I can be reached at Cindy@livingstrongcounseling.com. That's the best way to reach me. My assistant Laura will get back with you and get you in the right place.
So it sounds like the good news out there is, if you are looking for help, there is help to be had.
Absolutely. And one thing too, that I wanted to point out too, is that, you know, just because somebody has a sex addiction, just like with alcoholism, or drug abuse, doesn't mean they can't turn it around. And just because you're in a marriage that has that factor doesn't mean you can't ultimately have a great marriage. A lot of people, you know, and I see this all the time, I must divorce this person or I must leave this person because he's a sex addict. Well, that's not necessarily true. Or she's a sex addict.
Right.
That's not necessarily true. You know, once they do some solid recovery, there's absolutely ways to rebuild the trust in the relationship. And so typically how that starts is the therapist will work. Usually there's two therapists, one for the partner and one for the addict. And they will work on doing a disclosure. And if you think you have a sex addiction, don't worry, you're not going to have to disclose all the gory details. But it's just more about the lies that took place. So when I Right. said I was here, I was really here. You know, and then the partner has an opportunity to write an impact letter to say, this is how this harmed me and hurt me. And,
right.
and it's not to put blame on the addict, at all, but it's just for the addict to understand the perception of the partner.
So when you have these two people that are coming in for therapy or the support for the addict, do you ever assist them in helping if it can't be recovered or they have decided that they can't stay together because of the damage has been done, or they just decide that they don't like each other any longer and they don't want to be together. Do you help assist them in detangling their lives once they've hired an attorney or done those things and help them then marriage their post-relationship, post-divorce?
Yeah. And, you know, and that's what I was getting at too. Yeah. And some couples will decide like we can't come back from this, right? But trust can be rebuilt if they choose it, and both people have to be willing. But at the same time, you know, if the addict is relapsing all the time, they may decide, you know, the partner may decide, I can't keep going through this.
Right.
And so, and at that point, then we start, you know, talking about how they can disentangle in the healthiest way possible as to inflict the least amount of harm. And then, of course, we want to bring in someone like Mark to help them do the legalities of that and figure out the finances and that type of thing.
Yeah, I think the most important thing that I would take away from this is, like I mentioned before, if there's, you know, if you are concerned about yourself or spouse or close friend, whatever, there is help out there to be had. But it's also one of those tricky things that person has to be in the right place at the right time to really say, okay, I got a problem, and now I'm willing to do something about it.
Yeah, and willingness is the key.
Right.
You know, they, you know, I had a case not terribly long ago that, you know, I really thought that this person would not be willing at all. And it, what a surprise. I mean, as soon as the monster was out of the closet for this particular addict, it was, you know, game on. I'm ready to get rid of this thing in my life, and I want to feel better. And
probably very freeing.
Incredibly freeing, but the active word is willingness.
Right.
You know, they have to want it. They have to want to put skin in the game to achieve it.
Well, that, you know, and that's another thing that I think, unfortunately, we get too many times people are too concerned about what everybody else thinks. You know, and too many people offer unsolicited advice when they just need a big cup of shut the F up, you know. So yeah. Seriously, because, I mean, it's hard enough dealing with any of these issues, much less, you know, Auntie M's unwarranted discussions about it. Well, you know, you should. No. So, you know, I think what you said earlier is really, really important with trust your gut. You know, trust your gut, follow your instincts or that internal compass by which you are led.
Right.
And don't worry about what everybody else thinks, because in the end, what's important is what means something to you.
And, you know, it made me just think just now, Mark, you know, a couple of things to pay attention to. A lot of times people in their addiction will blame shift a lot. So they will... you know, if you try to point out some behavior that's not normal, they may turn it around. Well, you did this and then the next thing you know, you're talking about you versus, you know, the issue that you had. But, you know, I would also say, too, most of the time when you're in a committed relationship, you know, for any length of time, you know your partner's normal behaviors, right? And so you're going to notice anything out of the ordinary, and it's, you know, going to have that feeling, and you need to trust that. But you know, I do want to say too, you know, just because somebody has an affair or two does not mean that they are necessarily an addict. So you know, I just want to caution people to not run out and just start accusing people of an addiction until you know. But what you can do is try to find a CSAT therapist to work with and let them flush that out.
Right.
If both people are willing to at least check it out.
I think that is fantastic advice. I'm glad you mentioned that because, we don't want people going, aha, now I know. Mm-hmm. This is what you've got.
Right. Okay, maybe 3-4 times cheating, then consider 4-5. Is there a number?
Two.
Okay.
Or even one, because, you know, the case I mentioned just a little while ago, it was one that was discovered. It's because, you know, obviously if there's acting out behavior, you know, you may only discover one thing, right? And so it would be, I think, advisable to immediately make an appointment with a CSAT therapist to do some determinations on whether or not it could be addiction that's being hidden.
That reminded me of my last question, which was if you've ever seen where a spouse has used sex as a weapon, withholding sex or giving sex for good behavior or bad behavior, and the spouse cheats and then all of a sudden now this spouse is saying, oh, this person's a sex addict, or this person is a narcissist, or this person has done this or that or the other. Have you seen that often than not?
And so, you know, and for the first thing I want to say is, you know, when there's betrayal, it's never the partner's fault. It's just not, you know, there was a choice made to act outside of the committed relationship, right? And so, but however, you know, we are humans with physical needs. And so because of that, if the partner made the decision to act out and the spouse was withholding, I mean, it's a little more understandable, right? But it's still the choice was made to act out outside the committed relationship that they were in. And so, but sometimes, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean they're an addicted person. They may have just acted out to get their needs met. Because maybe they didn't, the communication was poor in the relationship and they weren't able to talk to the spouse to say, I'm really feeling like I need to, you know, step outside this relationship if we can't get our sex life in a better place.
Yeah, it's interesting how often that kind of thing comes into play. And I don't know if I heard you correctly, if you said it was weaponized or whatever, but that's kind of...
Weaponized, I didn't say that.
Okay. That is true. Yeah.
Because always a person that says you should never do that, because right. why would I punish myself? I mean, sex is just for as much for me right. as it is for sure. the other person,
yeah.
right?
Right. Yeah.
So why would I punish myself? But a lot of people do it. A
Absolutely.
Lot.
There is
and
no
sex
question.
Sex really shouldn't, you know, in a committed relationship, unless you're being abused, and that happens, you know... you know, if you're in an abusive relationship, that, I mean, that changes everything, you know, but, in a normal relationship where the relationship is even reasonably healthy, sex shouldn't be used as a weapon because right. it is part of the relationship itself. You know, unless you've made decisions as a couple that, you know, you're going to, you know, it's going to be a little more open or it's, you know, that sex isn't, you know, a huge part of your relationship or, you know, maybe you have certain agreements as to what that looks like of, you know, how many times per week or, you right. know, that's a whole different thing that, you know, the communication needs to be there so that the couple can collectively decide what is healthy for their relationship and how that meets the needs of both people. Yeah. And, you know, I hear it a lot from clients, you know, well, he wants sex way too much, and, you know, and I'm just, I can't do it that many times. Well, that's where the conversations come into play, right? And so, and it can go the other way, too, by the way. And I use he a lot, but it really can be both, and sometimes it's him saying, oh, my gosh, she's, you know.
So, right, insatiable.
Exactly. So, yeah, but no, I can see, like, you know, how if somebody does feel deprived that they could feel like it was being used as a weapon.
So lots more interesting conversations to be had. So it's really kind of an endless topic. So I'm excited that we're going to do this on a permanent yep. basis. And so everybody be looking for the lawyer and the therapist or some other catchy verbiage that will be used. So Cindy, thank you. Once again, if anybody needs to get a hold of Cindy, reach out to her at Cindy@livingstrongcounseling.com. And y'all know how to get in touch with us. If y'all are having family law issues, you can reach us at 214-469-3100. Or you can just reach out to me directly at mark@scrogginslawgroup.com. Thank you, folks.